Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
I found something. 20s, black,
sexy.
Oh, no. Oh, this sounds horrible.
No, tell me!
It's for a hooker named Big Butt Bertha who's as wide as she is horny.
Oh, that is perfect!
Oh, girl, no, it's not.
Hey, y'all, and welcome back to Represent. I'm your host, Aisha Harris. So I've got some exciting news, which is that we'll be switching things up a bit and coming at you more frequently as the show progresses and we get into the groove of things. Some episodes will work like the majority of the ones we've shared with you all so far, including some fun chatter with guest hosts at the top of the show. And others will be shorter mini-episodes, kind of like my timely discussion with Larry Wilmore following the cancellation of The Nightly Show. Today, the latter is exactly what you're going to get. If you've watched MTV's Girl Code, Maria Bamford's Lady Dynamite, or any other number of comedy shows and web series from the last few years, you may be familiar with comedian Nicole Byer. Now, she's taking the lead in her own semi-autobiographical new sitcom, Loosely Exactly Nicole, which premiered earlier this week on MTV. We chatted about the show and some of the minor controversy it stirred, as well as frustrating casting calls, and Leslie Jones and the perils of being a black female comedian on social media. Hope you guys all enjoy. So I am very pleased to say that today I have joining me Nicole Byer, the comedian, actress, writer, lots of different things. The first thing I have to ask you, because as we record this, we're a few days removed from the VMAs. You were there. You were doing a little bit of hosting and chatting in between the performances. And I saw that you tweeted that you met Beyonce and you talked to her.
Well, I didn't get to meet her. I wasn't like, hello, I'm Nicole. Hello, I'm Beyonce. And I was like, I know. But she was walking to get her award. And when any very famous person was walking through the hallway, a bodyguard would demand that we would scream at us to get against the wall so she could have an unobstructed, you know, walk to the stage.
Of course.
Also, yeah. She has like a cinematographer or videographer. I don't know the term. I guess it'd be a videographer, like videotaping her, I guess, in case of a documentary or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you need her, like, wave for her to, like, walk back. Also, Beyonce is surrounded by black women, which is, she employs so many black women, which, like, makes my heart burst with joy.
Yes.
It's beautiful to see her surrounded by black women. It's beautiful that she loves being black, and she's literally telling us, like just saying it. So I love it. Mm-hmm. But so as she was walking, she was like getting her award, and I said to my floor producer or like someone from MTV, I was like, when she walks back, I'm just gonna stick my head out and smile at her. And they were like, okay. So I did it, and I just couldn't help myself. I was like, you're such a treat. And then she giggled and touched my shoulder, said thank you, and giggled again. And I was like, I made Beyonce giggle. Aww. What a treat. Like, the moment in my head is so much bigger than it actually was.
No, I imagine it was.
But it was very nice.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that sounds like
it
a great
wonderful.
Story.
Wonderful.
So wonderful.
And I can't wait till we're, like, actually friends and I'll tell her about it. And she'll be like, I can't believe you were geeking out that much. And I'll be like, I know, B, I know. Isn't it stupid? And then she'll be like, let's jump off this yacht. And I'll be like, okay.
I love it. So can you just tell me a little bit about how you got to where you are now? Like,
sure.
what drew you to comedy in the first place?
When I was little, I used to just say whatever I wanted. And my grandmother would always go, oh, you tickle me. She's from Barbados, so, like, she, I don't know, talks differently than people who were born here. Mm-hmm. And when she says, you tickle me, that means you made me laugh. And she'd always, like, chuckle at the end of it. And then my goal would be to get her to say that as many times as possible on, like, our visits. So then I wasn't, like, actively pursuing comedy. I wanted to be an illustrator, but I can't draw, so that's an issue. So I think it was sophomore year of high school. My mother was just like, why don't you try out for the play? You're very loud and you've got a lot of energy. This might be good for you. And I was like, okay. So I tried out for the play, and it was several shorts from Christopher Durang. Mm. And it was because the drama program at my school was so big. Mm. And it was a good way to get, like, more kids involved. So I auditioned, and I got a role just called DMV Person in a short called DMV Tyrant, where it is just the drama being at the DMV, and I'm just not helpful. And I got so many laughs that first night. I was like, oh, I want to perform. And then that, like, sophomore year of high school is when I was like, I want to be an actress. So then I went to an acting school for 2 years, and then I was trying to, like, get on Broadway and win some Tonys, but your girl can't sing
well,
or dance.
You don't have to sing and dance to win a Tony.
No, but I'm also not an ingenue. I'm not, like, a beautiful, thin woman who's looking for someone to help her. And I'm also not, like, old enough to play the strong mama role. That's what I would be. I'd be someone's strong mama.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not old enough for any of that yet. So I'd have to, like, truly, like, write something for myself if I wanted to be in, like, a Broadway show. Because my type truly, I don't think, exists unless you sing and dance. Like, The Color Purple, yeah, plot me in there, but I can't sing.
That's so true. The Wiz, you could,
yeah,
you know.
You could plot me in all these. Like, I work in Dreamgirls. I could be Effie.
Mm-hmm.
I can't sing.
That's fair. You know your limits.
So then, like, in school, I would do, like, dramatic scenes and people would laugh. So then I was like, oh, maybe comedy is something that I want to pursue. And then I started pursuing comedy, and then I, like, made a choice. I was like, I only want to do comedy for right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in a couple of years or something, I'll try to do drama, but, like, for now, comedy.
So in terms of, you know, you mentioned you, if you wanted to be on Broadway, you would have to write it for yourself. So far, has a lot of what you've been doing writing for yourself up to the point where we're at now?
Yes and no. Girl Code, I mean, that's on me.
Right.
And then, like, the bit parts I've done have been, you know, stuff that was written. Like, I did a couple things on, like, Birthday Boy show on IFC and Maria Bamford show and just, like, things here and there. And then I was on a show called Party Over Here. Rest in peace, Fox canceled us.
Yeah.
That was stuff that was written for me,
mm-hmm,
by a team of writers. And then, I had a web series with my friend called The Pursuit of Sexiness that we wrote. And, yeah, so it's, like, a lot of it is writing a lot for myself. Like, to get started, you should write for yourself, because if you want a job, someone should be able to Google you and find you acting.
Mm-hmm.
Or find you doing comedy. Or find you doing anything. So that's what I tried to do. And then I made a video called Be Blacker that got passed around a little bit. And
what was that about?
Oh, so that was about casting directors asking me to be blacker, or and just saying, like, be blacker. And then we, like, improvised. She was like, Spike Lee black, like, different kinds of blacks. And then I leave the room, and she was like, that's the blackest we've seen all day. It's my friend Lauren. And she's on Kimmy Schmidt now, and she was so funny in that part. Mm. But yeah, like, it was, that's what you should be doing, just, like, putting content out there.
Yeah. Was that something that you sort of had to figure out as you went along, or was it something you sort of knew right away?
No, nobody fucking tells you anything when you want to be an actor.
Yeah.
In acting school, we practice doing cattle call auditions. I've never been to a real-life cattle call audition.
Really?
Where you step out yeah. and say, like, your name. You're like, I like tacos. Like, it's yeah. wild. So, like, yeah. I learned everything I know about comedy at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, which is also called UCB. UCB was like, this is a place where there's like-minded people who want to do things that you want to do. And then, like, you'd start performing, and you'd, like, really perform, and you'd get, like, really wrapped up in it. And then people would be like, you gotta make videos, too. And then you're like, oh, shit, yeah, that's how people see you. No one's coming to see shows unless they've probably seen you, like, in a video or something.
Right.
Like, people have to vouch for you before other people are, like, on board.
Mm-hmm. You've actually done a lot of work with MTV.
Yes.
In addition to Girl Code, you also did...
I did a show called...
Fast Food Heights. Yeah.
That was when MTV was doing web stuff called MTV Other, but it still lives on YouTube, I think just on MTV's channel.
Yeah.
That was so much fun. A show called Philosophy, hosted by Hasan Minhaj.
Mm-hmm.
I did a prank show called Ladylike. And then I would just, like, pop up and do, like, weekend brunch things, which would be, like, they showed all of, like, Laguna Beach, and then I'd be, like, in a commercial that's, like, the drama. Oh, my God. Let's talk about it. More mimosas, drama. Laguna Beach.
Yeah. Is UCB how you sort of got involved with MTV, or?
I got involved with, like, I auditioned.
Okay. Is it just I'm just curious as to how, because you do so many different things, so, like, how does that work exactly in terms of...
Well, I had a general with MTV. A general is just a meeting with an executive at a network.
Mm.
And I had a general with this woman named Lauren Zins, who auditioned me for Philosophy to be the host.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going through... Like, she didn't have a prompt or anything in her room. She just had the copy written on a poster board. And I, like, went through it, and I remember her going, that wasn't bad. And I was like, I'm not bad. Ooh. It was like, you weren't good, but you weren't bad. And I was like, ooh, what a treat. Because I was still super green. I hadn't done anything yet.
Yeah.
And then when he got hired, I was like, oh, they went in a real hard, different direction than me. And then they let me be on the show. And then I was like, oh, this is cool. And I was, like, getting my feet wet. And then I had a general with this other woman named Jessica Zalkind. And then this woman named Sachi Ezra, who was a producer on Girl Code, called me in for an audition. And then I auditioned with the director, Laura Murphy. And then there was a PA, Chandler. I remember it. Like, I got off a plane and went to this audition. And then I didn't really understand the format of the show. I had seen Guy Code, but I, like, didn't understand the mechanics of how that show was made.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you would sit in a chair and just talk to a producer. And then the audition, I was just like, I don't fucking know. They're like, tell me about frenemies. And I was like, I don't fucking know. I don't know buzzwords. Like, I don't know. When people tweet things at me like bae, I had to look up what bae meant. I thought it was short for babe and not an acronym for above all others. Or no.
I think it's above, before all.
Before any others. Before anything else?
Before all else?
I don't fucking know. I don't look at what the thought was. And I'm like, why are we calling people that hoe over there? That is so rude.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
No, language. Thank you. Unsubscribe.
But now you have your own sitcom on MTV.
Yes, I do.
Yes, Loosely Exactly Nicole.
Yes.
And can you tell me a little bit about what the show is about? It's semi-autobiographical, I imagine.
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah. Every episode has, like, a nugget from my life.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, an example of that is I booked a commercial that shot in Romania where I played the Nestle fairy and flew around and was very sassy. So we, on the show, had me book a commercial. Instead of Nestle, it's Swedish Slumber System Pillows, which was, like, really fucked up that someone was like, here, say that 100 times, Nicole, because that's what you have to do. Like, it's like, action, cut.
Yeah.
And it was so hard. And so in real life, I wrote a letter to the stuntman, a very salacious letter that I just talked about his dick and how I wanted it. And then I, like, read that to one of the writers, and then he wrote the episode right book a commercial, and then actually give the letter to the person, and then, like, sleep with him, and then, like, other stuff. So, like, we just, like, took nuggets, and then a writer used their imagination to fill in the blanks, and then there's some episodes that are verbatim my life. Like, I wrote an episode about how I quit doing acting for a little bit, and started working at a plus-size store. That I call Lame Giant.
Yes.
The fat ladies listening will know what store I'm talking about. Also, just a quick story about Lame Giant. They, like, kind of pressure you to get a credit card when you work there, so I got one. And then I, like, got myself in debt, and then I made a little money, and I was like, oh, I should pay off these debts. So I wrote them a check that said Lame Giant.
Did they cash it?
No, they sent it back with a letter saying that this was not funny, this is not the name of their company, and then I laughed, because I was like, that took an effort from someone who was mad. And then I sent back that check with the real check with that said the real name of the company, and then they sent the other check back to me. Because they were so, instead of just shredding it or, like, throwing it away, because no one can cash it because it's not a real company.
Right.
They just sent it back to me. So then I sent it back to them, and I wrote them a letter, and I was like, this is funny. And then they sent it back to me. I wish I was still sending it back and forth.
That escalated very quickly.
So quickly. Someone was so upset with me.
Yeah.
Like, so upset. Oh, it was so funny.
Wow. Okay. Now I wonder if someone's going to create a lame giant somewhere.
I hope so. Come to the store, lame giant. Ho, 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 lame giant. That's what we used to do.
Well, I want to talk a little bit because, I mean, that's a very, I mean, you're a comedian, but that's a very, like, bold thing to do. You are very bold. And in the show, in the first episode that I watched, and I think it might be the first episode that's airing, you paint your babysitting charge, who's a young Asian boy, mm-hmm. in black brown face, I guess, mm-hmm. in order to go on an audition.
And pass him off as my own son.
Yes. Yeah. And then you also talk of you're auditioning with him, or you are not auditioning, you are reading sides, preparing for an audition, mm-hmm. for the role of, I think her name is
Big Butt Bertha.
Big Butt Bertha, who is as wide as she is horny, apparently. Yeah. And I quote the show. So, obviously, there's a lot of, like, very touchy subject matter going mm-hmm. on there. What are you sort of hoping to accomplish or confront in this sort of just straight-in-your-face
humor? I think
humor?
It just, like, starts a conversation, because people are like, do you really audition for things like that? I'm like, yeah. That's a spot-on parody of, like, an audition that I went on, where I just had to, she had this insane name, and she was just like, give me my drugs, give them to me, and it's like, no shade to, you know, black women who do sound like that, and black women who do live that lifestyle, but, like, I'm not one of them, and I don't think that that's the only story of a black woman that should be told, so I think it was nice to, like, shed a light and start a conversation about stuff like that, and then the whole blackface thing, I think, is just really silly. It's very silly. That a black woman was like, this is okay. and then he says the N-word in one part of the episode. And in the sides that we gave him, it said ninja in mm-hmm. case he felt uncomfortable saying it or his mother didn't want him to say it because when kids are on set, their parents are there too.
Right.
And he looked at it and then made a hard choice to always say the N-word during his take. It was the funniest thing, and there's so much footage of me just laughing and, like, not being able to continue the scene because he was so funny. This kid is so, he's on Fresh Off the Boat. Ian Chen is one of the so funny.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just, like, a natural. And we, like, bonded by the end. We were just singing YMCA at one point. So cute, so funny.
Nice. The funny thing about, though, your character on the show is that you may, part of it, I imagine, is out of desperation because your character is perpetually broke. Uh-huh. But you're not offended, or at least you don't seem to be offended about going out for these sort of things. Like, when you're talking about Big Butt Bertha, you're yes. like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna kill this audition.
Yes. Fake TV Nicole will take anything she'll get. Mm. Real life Nicole has put some standards in her life, in her career life. I just started doing it in my personal life.
Good for you.
Leaving all these fucking idiots behind. Trying to date a man who's a real man with a job.
Good. Good for you.
But yeah, like, I think my character is, like, desperate. She's like, yes, I'll do anything. I will do anything.
Mm-hmm. So at the Television Critics Association press tour earlier this month in August, and I think you probably know where I'm going with this, but someone in the audience, apparently one of the critics, pointed out that your two EPs are white, and also your two best friends on the show are white, and you responded in basically saying, you know, the key is that they listen to me.
Yes.
Can you expand upon that? Like, what is listening for you? Like, what kind of feedback are you giving them?
When I say this isn't right, this isn't how I speak, I don't like that line, this joke's no good. And they go, okay. And then the next time I see the script, it's changed.
Mm-hmm.
That means they listened and they took my notes. But, like, I also was so taken aback because that man started off that question by, you're a black woman with your own show. That's unusual. And I was like, ooh, wait. Someone needs a fucking cookie or something. He's grumpy. Mm. And then went in with the white EP thing. I was looking for a female showrunner. I didn't care what color she was. I wanted a woman. Also, there's few black showrunners at the level that MTV wanted someone. And also, my female showrunner, Christine, this is her first time showrunning. So, like, she got my voice. When we talked, she was great. Also, she's had a consistent job since, like, the 90s. Like, she worked on SNL, Third Rock from the Sun, Nurse Jackie. Like, she's worked on things that are just, like, good.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I want this woman who's worked on quality. And then Chioke is a black man who also directed my episodes, who also wrote. Grace is a black woman who's on my staff, and I wrote. And I'm a consulting producer. That's a lot of black people in a room. And then there was more women than men. We have this other woman, Jackie, another woman, Laura, and then our script supervisor, DC. I think he was a script supervisor. No, a script coordinator. He was a dude. But, like, he's great, and he wrote an episode because he pitched some really solid jokes. And then my white best friend on the show dates a black man. And then I think Devin, the other one, I think he hooks up with someone else who's, like, so, like, there's color in the show. Jacob was just so good that, like, that's who the character was, and he just happened to be white. And then Jen, we had a hard time. I love Jen, and I'm very happy we have Jen, and Jen was really, 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 really funny in her audition, but we also had a very limited pool.
Yeah.
Because we started shooting in May. And we started shooting a week before people were released from pilots that didn't get picked up. So we had the smallest pool possible.
Yeah.
And we saw everybody in the comedy world. And Jen was truly the funniest of that pool. And that's just how it happened. And I know that might seem like an excuse. But that's just, yeah. That's, and I'm happy. I'm very happy with the people that we have. And I think if you watch the show, you'd see that there's a lot of color in it. A lady tweeted at me. She was like, are the lack of black people in your show because of higher-ups or that you don't hang out with black people in your life? And I was like, you don't fucking know me.
Oh, wow.
My best friend in the world is black. Like, you don't know me. Also, the trailer you watched had a total of 5 characters in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the whole show.
Yeah. Is that something you've encountered a lot in terms of just, I don't know what your back, like what kind of school you went to when you were growing up.
I went to an all-white school.
Yeah, yeah. So did I. Or not all white, but there were significantly more white people.
Me and my sister were the only black kids in my elementary school until 5th grade.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of like me. There were, I moved in 4th grade and in our entire grade, and it was a pretty big school, in our entire grade there were 3 black people. There were actually more Asians.
It's a tough world to live in.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, white kids, you're automatically kind of cool because you're black. And then they like you and they try to take on your effect. Like,
I wish that was my experience.
Oh, really? I was, like, automatically cool. I was fucking dope.
I was a nerd.
Were
I was
you?
So,
my sister's a little bit of a nerd.
Yeah.
But then, like, when you get around black people, like, you're, like, not black enough. And then it's just, like, what does that even fucking mean? What is the only, like, black is just the color of your skin. And I think we all walk a pretty similar experience no matter where you grew up. Like, yeah, I grew up around white people, but, like, that doesn't help me when I get stopped by a cop. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still black.
Do you feel... Because I recently interviewed Larry Wilmore after the Nightly Show was canceled. And one of the things he told me was that, you know, back when he was making the PJs, people would ask a similar question that you were asked at TCA, which is like, do you have black people working on your show? And he's like, why don't you ask the people on Friends?
Yeah. Like, why do you have white people? Like, where are your black people?
Yeah.
It's because it's. White is the norm, and then if black people... I don't. It's like, it's a double standard.
Yeah.
It's almost as if black people just... you never get anything right. You can't do enough. You can't please everybody. And it feels like so few black people get shows, so it's like, you gotta speak for everybody and lift everybody up.
Yeah.
I think Lee Daniels does a good job of, like, his room is peppered with color.
Yeah.
Which is, like,
and
awesome.
Not just black people. He has Latinos on there.
Everybody. Yeah. It's great. But it is also tough. And then you have to, like, give people a chance. Like, Grace was the writer's assistant on Schumer and had gotten a couple sketches on Schumer, but had never staff written on a show.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we gave her that chance, and now she's working at Kimmy Schmidt, and then she will be staff for the rest of her life because she's so fucking funny. But Homegirl had to work for a long time as a writer's assistant.
Yeah.
People don't realize how many steps it takes.
There's so many.
And, like, you have to start somewhere. And then, like, when she comes back, she'll be a story editor. So then when she goes back to Schmidt, Kimmy Schmidt, she'll probably be a story editor. Like, she just has to go up a bunch of ladders, and it's tough.
Yeah. And there's gatekeepers, too. And
yes. Oh, there's lots of gatekeepers. There's a lot.
Yeah. And they're not necessarily all conscious of it, but it happens.
No, it's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. What is... I mean, you talked a little bit earlier about how you no longer settle in terms of the roles you're given, unlike your character on the show. You are... You've reached the point where you are freer.
Yeah, I'll get auditions and I'll go, no.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what is the last thing... You don't have to say what the name of it was, but, like, what was the last, like... really terrible casting notice or audition you went on?
I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it was like I would have to rap. I cannot rap. I have no musical abilities. And I didn't love the script enough to learn how to rap. So then I was like, no.
Yeah.
And they're like, are you sure? And I was like, yes. But like that was just like the work involved with something that I felt like would be a little return. It's been a while since I've gotten something that I was like, what the fuck? I did a table read for an insane movie that, like, made no sense. My character was, like, not a real human being. None of the women were written like real human beings. I won't give you any specifics because they're so specific people would know.
Yeah.
But it was, like, I read the script and I was, like, I cannot believe that this is even having a table read. And then I get to the table read and there's, like, people funding this. There's produce. And I was, like... okay. And then we like went through the table read and I was just like, yeah, I was right. The way this reads is the way that it is. Cause sometimes you'll read something and then you'll hear it up and you're like, oh, I get it. Okay.
Right.
But, yeah, it was wild. And then if that movie comes to fruition, I will unsubscribe. Well, thank you. I do not want what I read at the table read.
Yeah. Yeah. You, before Loosely Exactly Nicole, you were also earlier this year in the Fox show,
Party Over Here,
which unfortunately lasted only a few episodes.
Rest in peace. No, I think all 10 aired, or 8.
Yeah, yeah, a few episodes. Yeah, 10. Oh, okay, so a whole season aired.
Yeah, a whole season aired.
Got it.
Fox was very interesting. They kept cutting into sketches, so we, like, had sketches that were, like, not longer, but long, and enough to fill 10 episodes. But then they started cutting into sketches, making 5-minute sketches 3 minutes, so then you have more time in the show. So then we were borrowing from other episodes. So then we had like 8 or 9 episodes worth of material and then did like a best of episode. And it was like, how do we have a best of? We only have one season. This is so, it was very interesting. Their standards department is nuts. I don't mind saying that, but like they wouldn't.
In a good way or in a bad way?
No, in a bad way. Like, okay. I couldn't say Lord Jesus. I could only say Lord or Jesus.
On Fox, you couldn't?
Yes.
I would think Fox, at least Fox used to be way looser.
If you think about Family Guy goes pretty far, but they're like, that's a cartoon. No one thinks it's real. And then I did a sketch, yeah. What? And then I'm not like shitting on Fox, but like truly I didn't understand things. And if one of the Fox reps wants to call me and explain it to me, I'm happy to listen. We did one sketch called Ghost Trappers where I fuck a ghost and then they pixelated the air when I was blowing it. So it was literally just me like miming a blowjob with pixelation over nothing, which to me was such a funny image. And they said, no, the people at home will think she's sucking a dick. And it's like, well, that's what I'm doing, and it's a ghost, and you can't see it. And why are we responsible for what people think at home when they watch television? And then I was, like, humping the air, and they're like, that's too sexual. And I was like, how? There's nothing there. There's literally nothing there.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was very wild to hear their reasoning on why some stuff just wouldn't fly. And then they would, like, cut into sketches so much that, like, you would be like, well, what is the joke? And it's like, oh, because they edited out a minute of it. So it's very hard to understand it.
Was it a half-hour show?
It was a half-hour show. Okay. What was shown, what aired was not the same.
Right. That's interesting just because when you think of, you know, Fox aired Mad TV for so many years, and that show, like, went totally over the top all the time.
Yep.
do you – well, to give our listeners just to sort of – let them know what the show is actually about, because part of it, the way it was advertised and the way it was that it was three female comedians mm-hmm. starring in a sketch comedy show. And
that's what it was.
Yeah. And that was, as the guy from TCA would say, you know, that's rare.
That's weird.
But did you read, like, I've watched a few of the sketches and reading the comments, I mean, as a woman and as a black woman,
mm-hmm.
I know what that's like. Like, do you feel as though the way it was received and why it didn't connect partially is the fact that it's three women, or?
Well, I think being three women was working against, it wasn't working for us. Because for whatever reason, men get so butthurt when women do anything. I do not know why. The whole female Ghostbuster thing, I was like, how is this ruining your childhood? And if your childhood is solely built on a shitty movie from the 80s, like, you need to rethink your life.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say it's shitty. It's not a shitty
movie.
It's
just not that good.
It's not.
It's overrated.
It's not a funny movie. It's like Bill. It's like a Bill Murray vehicle. Bill Murray's, like, very charismatic in it, but that movie's not joke-heavy.
Yeah.
Like, there are no jokes. I thought Ghostbusters was great.
I enjoyed it.
And I know it didn't make as much money as they were hoping, but, like, little girls will get to watch that for the rest of their lives and then watch Kate McKinnon in slow motion be such a fucking badass with all of her clothes on.
Yeah.
She's not rolling around half fucking naked with guns. Like, it blows my mind. Like, men, I don't know what they're so scared of. Women aren't coming to, I don't know, hurt them or something. It feels like men think we're coming to do something to them.
Oh, they totally do. They
especially, like, black women.
Mm-hmm.
Why post Leslie Jones's shit everywhere? What does she do to you other than live 48 years of her life, get a movie, get a TV show, and continue to live her life? Why does her existence make someone so angry that they hack into her phone and steal her personal identification, stripping her of her basic human rights to have a driver's license, to have a fucking passport, and to have any fucking pictures she wants? Like, that was such a misogynistic racial hate crime that, like, I feel like we should all still be fucking talking about.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
It is wild. I do not understand why men get so upset when a woman gets a sketch show. Like, I don't, like, all of the interviews we did for it, I was like, how do you feel being a woman in comedy? And I was like, can we stop fucking talking about it? It's just cool to be in comedy. You don't ask men what it's like to be a male in comedy. I did a show that was called, like, the lipstick something or other, and I was like, we don't call mentors baseball and fucking football club tour. Like, I don't understand why
being
a woman is so different. Like, it's It's wild. It's really wild to me. I don't know if I answered your question.
No. I did want to talk about the Leslie Jones things because that is, I mean, I think to answer your question as to, or to at least ponder the question that you gave about like why men are so friggin' upset when any woman, especially a black woman, reaches the heights that she has. It's just like Leslie. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I feel like people are constantly talking about like, oh, Bill Cosby, like they're trying to tear him down because he's a black man, blah blah blah. But then when I look at someone like Leslie Jones, she is being I think she's being torn down specifically because she's reached where she is.
Because she's a dark skinned black woman.
She's not what people would consider conventionally beautiful.
No.
She's very tall. Yep. She's boisterous. She doesn't act quote unquote ladylike. And it just saddens me. But yet she seems so
She's a happy woman, and I really hope that this doesn't break her spirits.
Yeah.
It's tough to keep getting up when people keep fucking knocking you in the stomach.
Yeah.
And she also like can't do anything right. She made a joke on SNL about how if this were slave time, she would be a breeder.
Right, I remember
that. It's a funny, smart joke. That's based in our history. So it's like a bunch of white dudes got butthurt about that. And it's like, well, why? Why are you getting so upset about it? This is her truth. She's not speaking to you or about you. She's talking about every other big black woman that was a breeder in that time.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, I think part of that was that it was SNL. And SNL is a very still white, culturally white institution. Had she done that what was that, Comic View and BET? If she had done that, it would have killed.
I spoke to her about it. She probably doesn't remember. I went to like an SNL like after party and we were talking about it. And she's like, I've been doing this joke for years and it kills. And I was like, because it's a well-written, well-thought-out, good joke. It's a good joke.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Davidson can get on air and talk about, I'd suck a dick for $1 million. Why not? Take care of my family. And it's like, so he, like, why? That's his truth. And it's funny. It's her truth. And it got laughs in the room. It was funny.
Mm-hmm.
She's a funny fucking woman. Also, like, the way that, like, people are like, maybe, like, it's not really a hate crime is what some people have said. And I was like, no. What happened to Leslie is a hate crime. Like, that is, like, that's a 2016 hate crime.
They targeted her specifically
because
she's black and a woman.
Melissa McCarthy didn't get it.
Mm-mm.
Kate McKinnon. Kristen Wiig didn't get anything. What? Why? And she was so funny in that movie and so great. And that was her first, like, that's one of her first starring roles. Like, if anything, we should be clapping and, like, lifting her up. Oh, man. Whew.
Yeah.
It makes me so upset.
Yeah. I mean, you also, I noticed that you retweeted a bunch of the comments from the VMAs where you were hosting. And
yeah.
They were mostly mean or just straight up hateful, calling you annoying.
Yeah.
Like, what is, why, and how do you deal with that?
Well, I know my voice is annoying. I don't particularly like it. But I had this really awesome opportunity to, like, co-host the fucking VMAs. And then people were saying, like, nasty things. So I was like, I favorited every single one and then retweeted some of the funny ones and then some of the mean ones. And then some people would, like, write back, like, man, oh, shit, I didn't know she was going to see that. And I was like, you used my full government name, like, my first and last name. All I had to do was search my name or, like, go through my mentions.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I think people say mean things for attention, so I gave them a little attention. And I mean, me reading something that's mean isn't going to ruin my day, because in the grand scheme of things, Rihanna was a foot away from me. Beyonce was walking past me. Drake was over here. Like, I got to be in the same place as all these people who are doing so well, and I got to co-host the fucking VMAs with Key and Peele and Jay Farrow and DJ Khaled. Like, that's incredible. It felt wonderful. And I think, like, so thankful to MTV for the opportunity. And it's like, you had to watch me on TV. I don't have to look for these tweets.
Mm.
But you have to watch me if you want to watch the show. And it's like, and I'm going to keep appearing. And I'm so sorry. And they're going to pay me.
Deal with
it. They pay me on top of it. And then I have a show coming out that they paid me to do. And you have, and you're going to watch it. You may hate watch it, but you're going to give me ratings. You may give me another season by hating me.
Mm-hmm.
And comedy is very subjective. And I understand that I'm not going to be funny to everybody. But it's just, it's wild that someone would take the time out of their day to tell you that they hate you.
Mm.
Imagine if we did that in real life. Imagine if someone walked up to you in the street and goes, I fucking hate your outfit. Your bra straps are showing, you're ashy, and you look like shit. Well, I'm going to go to my day job at McDonald's. Bye. Like, it would be so rude. People, it blows my mind. And people are like, I don't fucking care. And it's like, why? You should. Why don't you have empathy, you sociopath? Like, you are a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, truly, imagine if people said the things they say online in real life. It would be so nasty.
A lot more people would be injured, that's for sure.
Yes! Like, fights would just break out in the streets. Like, you said what to me?
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, I'm typing out, you send it away, and, like, nobody can touch me in this basement. I'm telling how I think. Nobody cares, baby.
Yeah. So my final question for you is the question I ask all of my guests, which is I would love for you to, and you obviously are the star of your own sitcom now,
it's wild. It's a dream fucking come true.
Yeah. But I would love for you to think back to something that you were not in that you watched, whether it was a TV show or movie, the most recent experience you've had of watching something else, someone else on screen and thinking, oh, wow, this really speaks to me. This represents sort of my train of thought or mm-hmm. me as a woman or black woman or just your way of life.
I don't know. When I was watching Stranger Things, I was so jealous that I wasn't a part of that. I was like, ugh, just let me, like, be in the background, just being like, I'm here. Like, I would have been, I loved Stranger Things. It was so good.
I still need to catch up with it. I haven't.
Oh, my God. I loved it so much. Those kids were incredible. There was strong female, like, have you seen any of it?
No, I haven't.
So the little girl in it, 11, is this, like, little girl who's just powerful.
Mm.
She says very little, but is a very powerful young woman. And I'm so curious to meet her in person because she really was astounding. But I truly watched that and was like, man, I'm jealous. I'm so jealous I'm not in this. I would love to be in that. So Duffer Brothers, they are the creators. If you're listening to this, please let me be in season 2. Also, when you watch it, there's a black kid of the group who kind of is the fun stopper and like the voice of reason sometimes. And my friend was like, why is he so whiny? And I'm like, because he's a black kid in the 80s hanging out with a bunch of white people. I'm sure every time he comes home, his parents were like, why are you out there with these kids? They did what to you? No! And he's just like, my mom's going to yell at me again. I better tell him we shouldn't do this. Oh, I guess I'll do it. It's just like, it's a funny thing to think about. I like, when I watch TV, I'll think about the people you don't see that's in their life. It's like his grandmother's probably like, oh, Lord, these white people. Oh, there he goes on that bike again. You know, I don't know when I'll see him next. I got to do a couple episodes of Maria Bamford's show. If it comes back for a second season, I hope they bring me back because working with Maria was such a joy.
That's Lady Dynamite.
Yes,
correct.
Lady Dynamite. Yeah. She is such a fucking joy. Every day at PA would be like, I like worked, I think maybe 3 days, 4 days. But PAs would be like, how are you, Maria? And she's like, good. I mean, I have my own show, so how can I say that I'm anything but good?
That's a pretty good impression.
Thank
of her.
You. It's useless. No one will ever ask me to do a Maria Bamford impression. I do Emma Stone too. Useless. Useless.
Well, thank you so much for coming and, good luck with the show.
Thank you. I'm like holding back a sneeze. That's why my face did that. I know I looked insane.
It's okay.
Thank you so much.
As always, thanks for listening in on us. You can check out Loosely Exactly Nicole on Mondays at 10:30 p.m. on MTV. And you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Megaphone, Stitcher, or any other place you find your podcasts. Represent is produced by the lovely, awesome Verilyn Williams. The executive producer of Slate Podcasts is Steve Lichtig. Andy Bowers is Chief Content Officer of Panoply, and you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Slate Represent.
Music is performed by the awesome San Francisco funk soul band, Midtown Social. Until next time.